Sometimes the graphics are important. I want you to notice that today's topic isn't faith and reason or faith versus reason. It's faith and reason. For most of my life, I believe that there was an inherent conflict between faith and reason, and that they could not live well together in the same system and would have to fight each other even within an individual life. I thought that faith meant superstition and mythology, where reason meant logic, philosophy, and science. I saw no way to reconcile them, and I had no desire to reconcile them, and so as a young man, I thought that I took the road less traveled, the road of reason, and that would make all the difference. Over a period of years, my views, my perceptions have evolved to some extent, where today I think I'm far more open to the poetry of religion, the ineffable but profound experiences that we as human beings get to have, those wow moments that defy our ability to make them neatly ordered and completely explicable. We might have explanations, but understanding is somewhat different. I really started thinking about this seriously when I was preparing the Christmas service for this last year. And as almost every year, we open with, "Come all ye faithful, joyful and triumphant." And of course, the irony struck me, which was, what in the world are Unitarian Universalists doing singing, "Come all ye faithful"? Are they talking or singing about ourselves? Or is it just a question of, this is a traditional song and we don't need to really think about the words too much? But as I thought about it, it struck me that we are the faithful in the truest, most etymologically correct and direct meaning of the Greek word fidel. Fidelity is what faithful is. Faithfulness. We are faithful, the faithful, to ideas, to values, to each other, to life, to the sense that our lives here make a difference. We are faithful to our sense of responsibility for making a good difference in this world. We are indeed the faithful and have every right to sing, "Come all ye faithful," and invite others to join in this faithfulness to life, to each other, to love, and to values. The irony, the great compelling irony, is the part that doesn't ring as true is the joyful and triumphant. Unitarian Universalists can be as dour as Garrison Keillor's Norwegian fishermen Lutherans. Unitarian Universalists can feel despair and wrung out because the world just doesn't jump when we snap our fingers and say jump, because the world seems to be involved in a vast pre-enlightenment conspiracy to erase every good thing that we've done and every wonderful thing that we hope for and work for. Well, that much is true. The world is involved in that conspiracy, but it's not going to win. We should feel joyful that we are in a world that needs us, that creation is not finished, that our ability to reason and our reasonable faith in life is called for, is needed, is required in order to build a more goodly nation and a more goodly civilization. Unitarian Universalists dare not do anything other than visit despair. You want to feel tired? Okay. You want to feel that the world out there is just big and scary? Okay, visit that place. But know that the facts of the matter are different. That we have and we do make a difference, and that our faithfulness has historically made a remarkable difference in this world and in this country. Unitarian Universalists have helped to shape this nation in ways that I don't know another denomination that can lay the same claim. From arguably Thomas Jefferson, the fellow traveler, to Benjamin Franklin, to Thomas Paine, who was a Paine, well, one of those names, Dickensian names, it's true, to the Adams family and all of them, John and John Quincy and Henry and all the various Adamses, we midwived as Unitarians, as people of a liberal faith, the birth of this nation. As artists, as philosophers, from Louisa May Alcott to Florence Nightingale, we put our prayer into service, the service of art, the service of compassion. We designed the free secular education system that gave us the possibility of having, if only for a moment, an unum out of the e pluribus. That free secular education from Dewey and from Horace Mann took people from all over the world, from every walk of life, and gave them the possibilities of being Americans, as having American appended to their identity without erasing their other history. This was enormous. Families like Darwin and Huxley and Wedgwood, although much of their work done in England, were fundamental in creating a real enlightenment in this nation, in having a level of discourse that elevated reason to one of the highest places of human aspiration and made the 20th century possible. From Whitman to E.E. Cummings to William Cullen Bryant, we as Unitarians and Universalists, we have written and sung America's song. Want to feel despair? Only for moments, because we have been enormously effective. Now, there are no final victories. Every issue has to be revisited. Every important victory has to be defended. Every right has to be re-won. And I suppose that I could feel like Sisyphus about that. Oh, didn't we do that 10 years ago, or 20 years ago, or 50 years ago, or 100 years ago? Yes. And we succeeded. And yes, like Sisyphus, we have to push the stone up the hill again. Shall I despair or say hallelujah, because that hill is calling me? And that hill is calling you to become involved. And our jobs are not finished. And our jobs will not be finished within our lifetime or anyone's lifetime, because it is a constant engagement with life that our faith and our faithfulness call us to participate in. And I think that that's wonderful. I started reconsidering these issues of faith and faithfulness when I was asked to teach a class on the subject of faith versus reason. There is nothing like having to put your thoughts in order and try to speak them sensibly to a group of intelligent people to concentrate the mind, almost as well as the prospect of being hanged in the morning. And when I concentrated my mind, it just seemed clear to me that most of the conversation between faith and reason was a misunderstanding. That those lines are not about superstition versus reason. Superstition, I'm not particularly in favor of. Mythology, I kind of enjoy. Reason, however, can have every snare and delusion that faith has. There are so many propositions that we accept reasonably by faith. Let me explain. I know that the world is round. I've seen the pictures. Confess, don't you really wonder why people don't fall off of Australia? How you can walk on Antarctica? How that work? I mean, I know I've got an explanation, gravity. But having an explanation and really understanding it is something very, very different. Yeah, I know. I believe that the world is spinning at 18,000 miles per hour. And I guess I think I understand why the oceans don't fly off into space. No, I can give an explanation. That's not the same as really understanding. I actually don't understand why my hair is still combed if I'm standing on a planet that's spinning at 18,000 miles an hour, going through a universe even faster, but somehow it doesn't. And I believe all of that. I mean, I truly do. I believe. Do I know? Well, I think I know. Faith, reason, some combination, some place where all of these wonders join. Think about Walt Whitman and the body electric. Think about, I know that underneath all of this is this remarkable ecosystem of balances, of chemicals, of hormones, of the production of energy, of the elimination of waste, far more efficient and effective than any society that humans have created. I know, I believe that there are cells that talk to each other. And they talk to each other in two languages. They don't simply... No, I'm not talking about English and Spanish here. This is not the bilingual cells here. I'm talking about the cells that talk to each other chemically and electrically. Wow! And together with all of this communication, there's something that we call mind. That this piece of creation has the ability to think of itself. And see itself. It's completely remarkable. I can explain it. I don't really understand it. Science, reason, faith, fidelity, it's all so wondrous and wonderful. That's what's amazing. We have understandings at so many different kinds of levels. Logic. Can't we all just fall back on human beings have the ability to be reasonable? Sorry, that has not been proven. We have the ability to be reasonable for really short periods of time. But we have the ability to reason. We have the ability to create logic. Isn't that the ultimate safety net against all the craziness of the world? No. It's not, because we can be driven astray by false logic. Because it's very hard to see buried in political rhetoric and in religious rhetoric the logical fallacies. All Taliban are Muslim. Ali is a Muslim, therefore Ali is a Taliban. No. No. But in the rhetoric, you can't discern the undistributed middle in that second proposition. So we need to have values to which we are faithful when logic leads us off into passionate wrong directions. We need checks and balances. To illustrate how this conflict between faith and reason is so often misrepresented, the two great Western examples of the conflict between faith and reason are usually the trial of Galileo and the Scopes trial. They weren't about faith versus reason at all. Galileo had been writing about his view of the universe and the earth circling the sun for 20 years. He'd been interviewed by the Inquisition long before his trial. He had made peace with the Inquisition. Every serious scientist understood the Earth went around the sun. The Pope understood that the Earth went around the sun. What got Galileo in trouble was politics and ego, his and the Pope's. He wrote a play called On the Systems of the World, and in it he portrayed a character loosely based on the Pope and called him Simplicissimus, the simpleton. This was a political mistake. So the Pope summoned him, and Galileo did what any of us would have done. He got a note from his doctor. I'm not making this up. He got a note from his doctor that said, Mr. Galileo cannot appear and the journey would be hazardous to his health, and he is suffering from headaches, gas, my favorite, hypochondriacal syndrome. That's actually pretty, anxiety, it's what it's called. Also my other favorite is flying pains. The Pope was not amused and made Galileo come. And Galileo was tried not for being wrong, but for being rude. He was tried for threatening the authority of the establishment, the church, and personally, the Pope. The science wasn't really in dispute. Scopes trial. Really nice to look at that as faith versus reason. It's not. It was politics all the way. John Scopes was from New York. He was sent there to try the law. He was sent there, you're not going to believe this, he was sent there by the ACLU in order to break the law, in order to get it judged. The law had been passed with the full expectation that it would never be enforced, only as a sop to the great unwashed. And the legislators who passed the law and the governor who signed it never really doubted that that troublemaker, Unitarian Darwin, was right. But they put out the law just for the politics of it. And so there was a conspiracy to try the law. And it really never was, because the defense asked for a guilty verdict, got a guilty verdict, and then the judge suggested the penalty. The case was thrown out because of the judges suggesting the penalty, and it was never passed on or kicked out of the Supreme Court. It remains today untested. And in fact, it didn't forbid the teaching of evolution. It forbade the denying of the biblical story, and there is a difference. So many of these conflicts don't really need to be conflicts. They can so easily be the both ands. As Unitarian Universalists, we accept reason. We are faithful, and we are a little unusual. Well, more than a little unusual. When people ask me about Unitarian Universalists and Unitarian Universalist churches and practices, one of the first things is, what do Unitarians believe? And there's the temptation to go into all the things that Unitarians don't believe, as Garrison Keillor loves to do. And all of that's really misleading, because if you're not required to have a theological belief, it is not the same thing as being forbidden or discouraged from having one. So when you go into that list of what you don't believe, well, maybe some of you don't believe in gravity. That's okay. Fly away. But we believe in reason. We believe in faithfulness to each other and to life and to values. People ask, well, how big's your congregation? That's not a question that gets answered in the normal framework of religion. Like asking, what do Unitarian Universalists believe? The answer is so wide and vast. Most congregations of most denominations are lucky when they have 20 to 30% of their book members present on their normal times of service. The high holy days of Judaism and Christianity are different. Unitarian Universalists normally have from 80 to 120% of our members present on our normal services. That's remarkable. And it's remarkable, but it makes sense because we are a chosen faith. Even for the people who were born Unitarians or Universalists or Unitarian Universalists, even for second and third generation, we are a chosen faith. Nobody comes to this church purely out of habit. Nobody thinks that if they went to a different church or to a different denomination, if their souls were being better fed, that they would be betraying anything. Nobody shows up because they're afraid God will strike them dead out of a horrible sense of either fear or guilt. You're here because you chose to be here, not by habit, not by fear, but by positive affirmation in our faithfulness to each other and our faith in the use of human reason to make a difference to each other and to make a difference in this world. And that is wonderful and that is remarkable. We come together to form these communities of faith. Unreasonably, look at what Unitarian Universalists accomplished in the 19th century and in the creation of 20th century America. We succeeded against all odds and reason. We succeeded. It is the proof text that the call of the future for us to be faithful today to our own individual values, to work together, to see our values in program, in food, in love, and in compassion, we have a faith that it makes a difference. We have a faith that our reason can work to guide us and that the democratic principles that we believe in are worth keeping in our hearts, are sparks that are worth fanning into the world. We are a faith that says yes. We say yes to the world. We say yes to this life. We say yes to each other, and we continue on our part of our physical and spiritual journey of reason and of wonder and of wow. Unitarian Universalists, not bad, not bad, not as superior as we sometimes act because we don't always admit the shaky foundations of some of our beliefs, but it is the fidelity and the openness to hear, to change, the openness of mind and of heart. Yeah, science can change, and it can be as hard to change science as to change a catechism. A little humility, a lot of optimism, and we can continue making the good difference that we have made with so many other people of so many other religious views and branches in this world, and make tomorrow better than today for more people because we were here together and we gave each other energy and hugs and hope. That is a faithful call.